Greetings all, you're listening to Exploring Boys Education, a regular podcast produced by IBSC, examining current issues affecting boys, teachers of boys and boys' schools. I'm Tom Batty, Executive Director of IBSC, and it's a pleasure, as always, to welcome you to another episode. In this episode, Bruce Collins, IBSC Director of Member Engagement, speaks with Anna Louise Simpson, Head of Wadhurst at Melbourne Grammar School Australia, and Kerry Oldman, Middle School Executive Director and Acting Deputy Principal at Melbourne Girls Grammar School, about what a genuine, sustained collaboration between neighbouring boys and girls schools can look like. Declaring interests on both sides of the Botanical Gardens, for 14 years I was respectively both head of Friendly Rival and parent of two girls. Anna Louise and Kerry describe how two schools 700 metres apart, with the ups and downs of a long history between them, built something deliberate and lasting. They talk through the intentional programmes they've developed for boys and girls to learn together, and the conversation ends with practical advice for any boys' school considering reaching out to a neighbouring girls' school. First, however, we have some IBSC news. In a strong year for professional learning, since the 1st of July 2025, IBSC has hosted 39 programmes and more than 224 member schools have registered over 1,400 faculty and staff, 209 of them attending multiple offerings. Thanks to every school that made professional development a priority this year. Exploring Boys Education is now in its seventh season. This is our 82nd episode since launch, and we've reached the milestone of a regular listenership of over 1,000 people. Thanks to all for tuning in, and thanks to Bruce for initiating the concept and delivering the product. The 2026 IBSC Annual Conference, hosted at St. Stithians College in Johannesburg, runs from the 29th of June to the 2nd of July. And a reminder, registration is still open. You haven't missed out, so please don't miss out. Lastly, keep an eye on the IBSC website. 2026-27 programming will be announced soon. Now over to Bruce, Anna Louise and Kerry on all sides of the town.
It's wonderful to have Anna Louise Simpson and Kerry Oldman with me on the podcast. I've been looking forward to this conversation, both of you. So welcome to Exploring Boys Education. I picked up on a presentation that both of you did at the regional IBSC conference in Adelaide recently. And it was all about the connection of boys and girls schools and boys and girls schools working together. And I was really excited by what I read on this PowerPoint presentation and have since heard from others at that conference, which I believe was a wonderful gathering. So many others at that conference have highlighted the insights that they got from your presentation. So we're going to be speaking about that now. But Kerry, why don't we start with you and introduce yourself? I think this is one of the first times we've had a girls' school feature on the podcast. I'm really excited about that too. But it would be wonderful just to hear a little bit about you and Melbourne Girls Grammar School as well.
Thanks, Bruce. Yeah, thank you for having me, having us, and letting me wave the flag for girls' education in a sense as well. I've got a little bit of a twang in my accent here. I'm from New Zealand and obviously did my foundational teaching in New Zealand, and from there moved to the UK and worked for almost 20 years in London in independent schools there, both all boys setting, all girls and co-ed setting, which is actually randomly how Anna Louise and I have come across each other. We've found out post the UK. I moved back to New Zealand for a head of school role in New Zealand at an all-girls independent school, which has then led me to where I am now at Melbourne Girls Grammar. My role is Executive Director at Melbourne Girls and currently Acting Deputy Principal as well. And just knowing how important it is to cultivate strong, fierce women probably is what I think our superpower is here at Melbourne Girls. It's really important to us that we are developing ethical women of action, and the relationship that's grown between our two schools has been an important part in doing that. It's really about empowering young women to leave the school environment still feeling like they're going to have an impact on the world.
It really resonates with me, Kerry. I have three daughters, and I'm invested in this boys' school environment, but to hear that schools are really empowering young women to be all that they can be and not to bow to expectations and stereotypes is really exciting. Anna Louise, what about you?
Hi, Bruce. Thank you for having me. It's also extend warm thank you for being here. Also echo your sentiment about the Australasian conference in Adelaide a few weeks ago. It was exceptional. And I came back really energized from the people that I connected with and the workshops that we attended. I, like Kerry, have a little accent here, although has become quite Australianized over the last few years, but originally British, although I have lived in Australia now for over 20 something years. I have worked predominantly in Australia, actually. First off, starting at a boys' school on the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, and that really taught me the importance of all boys' education and what it can achieve and what it offers young men, and also of a values-based education, which is, I think, why I enjoy so much now being at Melbourne Grammar School. Whilst there, I was very, very passionate about international politics. It's still sort of my secret luxury that I will read about at night. And so I have a master's in international relations and for a long time was the chief assessor for the politics here, wrote the textbook, wrote the study design, but moved on to Haileybury, which is another college soon after, and led their VC in China program. So I actually managed four schools in China for Haileybury for a number of years. And that was an incredible experience, seeing actually every single day the importance of education to people who are working really hard, and to run a program then from based in China whilst being based here in Australia. I learned a lot too. Headed to the UK for a few years, got stuck there during COVID. And at that point, Kerry and I's paths sort of crossed with some students that we both taught, although didn't know that until we arrived here, and then moved back to Australia and am now at the head of Wadhurst, the middle school campus at Melbourne Grammar School. It's one of the oldest schools in Australia. It's an all-boys secondary school. We have a co-ed primary school. There's only one other school in Australia that has that same setup, and that presents us with wonderful opportunities and a few little tweaks and challenges along the way. And like Kerry, we are very much about a holistic education in terms of what we want to provide to our young men. So we want our young men to have excellent academic results, but we want to be good humans when they go off into that world, and to cultivate, you know, young people who want to create their own future and to be part of that and that society and to be critical thinkers there. And so in that way, Melbourne Girls Grammar School and MGS are very similar in sort of their outlook and philosophy.
It's wonderful to hear, Anna Louise, to see boys' schools around the world working really, really hard at sending good humans out into the world. And I think those middle school years are really crucial, and both of you are in that space. So I'm excited to hear about how you connect your similar visions in ways that help boys and girls to understand each other and to work together better. In your presentation, you alluded to the fact that the two schools have had a checkered past in terms of relationship, that it hasn't always been easy. I wonder if you could maybe share a little bit of that history. Maybe it's a complicated past, but it seems in this program that you're doing now with your students, you really have come together. How did you get from that difficult place to where you are now?
I might start, as I think maybe Melbourne Grammar School is responsible for the slightly frosty relationship that transpired in the 1990s. Both of our schools, just so everyone who's tuning in knows, are about 700 meters away. We're both proud Anglican schools. There are so many things that are similar about us. We have many, many shared families. And in the 80s, it was very common that our students would do joint classes together. However, sadly, in the early 90s, Melbourne Grammar School decided quite unilaterally to announce that it was going to go co-ed and made that announcement without any sort of consultation with the community. Melbourne Girls Grammar School felt quite strongly about that, that there had been no consultation with them that we were going to go co-ed, and had just announced it. And it was felt that it was very much sort of a takeover of the school. It ultimately didn't transpire. We had a very large and vocal community say they weren't happy about that decision, that they hadn't been consulted about it. I mentioned the presentation we were doing today to an old Melbournean, and he very passionately started talking again about our decision to declare going co-ed. So much so that actually it's entered our official history book, which is called Challenging Traditions. And there's a quote in there that says, there was little chance of doing anything without the cooperation or at least the goodwill of Girls Grammar, which had been almost irretrievably offended. And so we were starting off from a pretty low base. However, the schools have worked together in lots of different ways over the years. It's not like there's an iron wall there, but there's definitely been a lot of suspicion. Where there was a relationship, it definitely centered on the senior school. So they would compete in the performing arts and debating. There is a play every year. We would send girls and boys to perform in each other's performances. But really, that was where it stopped. And we felt that there was a need to do more. I think, Bruce, sometimes, you know, you just have some good luck on your side. And I started at Melbourne Grammar School at the same time that Kerry started at MGGS, and we met each other, both new in our careers at our new schools. And then we both realized that we had actually taught some similar students in London, just 17,000 kilometers away. And that connection, I think, meant that we trusted each other. And I think that we both know that this is a good thing. We both passionately believe in single-sex education. We know why it exists. We know what it offers our young men and our women. But we also know that our boys and girls go off to a co-ed world, and we have to give them opportunities to engage with each other meaningfully.
And I think also it's finding what was historically perhaps a weakness and building it into a strength. I think knowing that Melbourne Grammar has a primary school, which is co-eds, knowing that traditionally was a bone of contention in enrolments because the girls were going to Melbourne Grammar. And now that's become a strength. So the connection that we've had within the middle school has actually seeped down into the junior school as well. So we have a really strong connection with the executive within that space to onboard the MGS primary students as well. It's really because neither school's really trying to become the other at the moment. I think that we recognise each other's identity and can celebrate that at the same time.
We're very well supported by our headmasters of each school. So we've got Dr. Tony Meath and Philip Gritzner. They also started at around about the same time at MGS and MGGS. And again, there's nothing like a clean slate in that sense to help, but they have been big drivers. They can see that what we're doing adds value both to the children's experience, but also to our schools more holistically. And so they have been really big champions of that. We now have an annual dinner together. Our two school executives, our school council chair people meet and they have dinner together. And we now get smaller teams of groups together. It's really flourished from sort of a hard start, but I think everyone sees the positives that come from working together.
Kerry, you speak about that symbiotic relationship that you celebrate each other. And I think it's a big thing for schools not to see themselves as in competition with each other, but working together. What else stands out for me is the intention of leadership. We mustn't negate the fact that leaders like you and others have been intentional about making it work. I want to dive into the key parts of working together. And I know you have a number of programs that are focused on a common outcome. But before we dive into the details of programs, I'm sure that when you're thinking about programming, the thought behind this needs to be really intentional. Tell me a little bit more about that intentionality. How do you make sure that the program does benefit both groups equally? How do you know when you've got the balance wrong? This must be quite a fine line.
Look, honestly, thank you for picking that up as well, because I think that's been really important for both Anna Louise and I and our schools as a whole to make sure that we're really deliberate in that. I think so often bringing boys and girls schools together can feel a little bit tokenistic, but we've been absolutely passionate on that intention that it is authentic, that it's deliberate, and that it's got challenge for our students. So we're trying to move beyond those stereotypes, the way that we get our students together to begin the sessions. I was just chatting with parents this morning, new families coming in and wanting to find out more about the program, and saying to them how often we do believe that we bring girls into, I think Anna Louise summed it up beautifully in Adelaide, to civilize the boys. But that's certainly no longer what happens. I think the world has changed, and I think our girls have absolute safety in their own learning environment, and that gives them the drive, the confidence, and the passion for wanting to work together with the boys. And it's been really amazing for them to see each other in a different learning environment. So the city in itself is an amazing resource, isn't it, to be able to have our students out there, a really genuine learning space. So they're not sitting next to somebody learning. They're amongst a real life setting, learning together, collaboration, trust, respect for each other, recognizing how society's changed over time and how we need each other. And I think that that's always the piece that we're trying to share with the students, is that empathy, those soft skills that we often talk about. And they honestly, they think that they're going out for a jolly for a week in Melbourne, but actually the intention behind it, the learning is next level. So I think that's the best kind of learning, when it's just happening. but it doesn't mean that there's not a huge amount of structure behind the scenes with our teaching teams that are putting this together.
And who says that learning can't be jolly either, right?
Exactly. And I just think, you know, I'll add that from the very start for both the boys and the girls, for both programs, there are very clear learning outcomes. We make it really clear what we expect them to produce by the end of that 6-day period for the Melbourne experience or for that day for the healthy relationships, knowing that it builds into other things as well. So when you have those clear learning outcomes, you know it's structured, it's not going to be tokenistic. There is something that has to happen and be created and produced at the end of it, which is verified. How do we know when we get it wrong? We have parents, as I'm sure many of our listeners do, that give robust and timely feedback if they feel that the balance isn't right. And I think that's right and that's fair. And, if our parents feel that the girls are having to civilize the boys or the boys aren't pulling their weight or doing what's expected of them in terms of those learning outcomes, they give us that feedback. And actually, the students give it to us too. But we do check in with our staff. We do ask for feedback at the end of every experience happening. What could we do? What worked well? What didn't work well? And that has really helped us make the balance better for us there. We know, and I remember someone said this at the Adelaide conference, if we don't create parameters for our students of what success is, they're going to create their own parameters of what success looks like. They'll create their own rituals. And so we have to tell them, this is what success looks like for us, for this program. And then we're going to ask them to aim for that. And so it is very intentional to tell them what we expect of them and what that then looks like.
And I think there's real power in expecting boys or girls to rise to the occasion or believing that they will. The kids we work with will actually step up to the plate and live up not only to our expectations, but to their expectations of themselves.
I think that the end result, that kind of end celebration is these lifelong friends. You know, we've got them in the middle years and thus still a little bit tentative about those relationships, but they know they're genuine relationships and they build year on year. And you hear our year 11 and 12s talking about their best friends from Melbourne Grammar or their best friends from Melbourne Girls, and the way they, like, again, I keep coming back to that celebrate each other piece because they do maintain these friendships well beyond their school years, and they're genuine friendships. It's no longer those stereotypical roles in society.
Yeah, I also love that it moves away from what has often been the regular way boys and girls schools connect, you know, just a social occasion or a dance, the odd outreach together maybe where people don't really connect. And I think if we are intentional about building relationships or giving kids opportunities to build relationships, the respect and the empathy and the connection that comes with that is really, really important.
Yeah.
So let's dive into some of those intentional programs that you've developed. And I'd like to start with what you call the Melbourne experience. So maybe share a little bit about what that is and how it works in practice and what that really does for the relational connection and working together and being able to see beyond the stereotypes.
Yeah. In a nutshell, what the Melbourne experience is, the coming together of our two schools where we really carefully curate the groups that the students are in. I think that that's a really massive part of this, is making sure that the students are in solid groups of around 5 or 6 boys and girls mixed, and they take over the city. They basically go into Melbourne and they are given the task of delivering a documentary on how Melbourne has evolved over time. So they can take different aspects of Melbourne. They could look at sport, they could look at culture, food, which is always a popular one because they enjoy eating different food in Melbourne all week. And so they're given that task and they have meetings each day. They come together different days. They do sessions on how to create a documentary, how to use digitech within those spaces, how to approach strangers when they can use their phones, all of those sorts of things. So it's a massive task, a massive undertaking. We have staff dotted all around the city, so there are always people for them to go to. And I guess recognizing how important it is for trust to be built in that kind of environment is huge. Communication in that environment between the girls and the boys, and really how they have to rely on each other in that space when they don't necessarily have a teacher accountable for everything that they're doing. And they really thrive when we get feedback from parents. They basically say from Monday to Friday, they have a different child come home on the Friday, which is amazing. And of course, everyone deals with it differently. Some of our students will give us feedback. We have made sure that the program has evolved over time to make sure that we are supporting those students that may not feel as comfortable to begin with in that setting. And so much so that sometimes there are boys that are just in a group. We make sure that we're really aware of our students' needs as well in that space.
I might just add, you know, I have 204 boys in year seven and they come from 95 primary schools, so all with a different backgrounds of understandings, of skills, relationships, and all at different places in their journey. I think we don't take it for granted that they feel comfortable with each other. And so that we have, you know, almost a whole afternoon now we've built in where we try and do tasks where they just get to know each other. So they talk about how many uses are there for a paperclip in their group, knowing that there's no right answer, there's no wrong answer. And it just gets into that mindset that we're going to collaborate and work together. We get them to do a see, think, wonder, and that gets them comfortable with sharing their thoughts and ideas with their group, knowing that there's no right or wrong responses. And I think you have to very intentionally build those in. And if I'm honest, with our boys, before we go and meet NGGS girls for the first time, we talk very explicitly about what is appropriate and inappropriate behaviour. What's been really lovely to see and hear is the boys' reflections a few years out from the Melbourne experience saying, actually, this is what we learned. This is what we realised about ourselves. This we realised when there was a right time to say something, when there was the wrong time to say something. And they became much more intentional about what they said and how they said it, which is, of course, what we wanted them to achieve. But it was lovely to hear for themselves, you know, in year 10, that they actually realised that that was the case through the program.
I'm sure there's a curricular connection with kind of the documentary and producing the documentary and all the things they have to do around that. But would you say that what you just spoke about now, Anna Louise, what you hear years later about what was really built in the boys, and I'm sure, Kerry, you would have similar stories listening to girls later on. Is it that the documentary in the end is actually a little bit of a byproduct because you're actually trying to grow and develop other things? I don't want to minimize the actual task, but it seems to me like connections and the relationships and learning how to work together and building trust and accepting responsibility and accountability and all those things are almost a bigger takeaway than that final product of a documentary.
100%, Bruce. The documentary is just a vehicle to get us there. And a fun one at that, which they love learning about as well. And the other part of that is also the comfort that they then feel and confidence they then feel in navigating public transport and in accessing Melbourne, which is, you know, a big metropolis of 5.5 million people. And so that's an also really important part of that program. And the group together will go through different experiences, some positive, some negative, about traversing Melbourne and urban Melbourne. And through that, they'll create bonds together.
And it's giving them that vehicle, isn't it, to take those risks and to challenge themselves. And it works so well. And, I think we've had parents come and say, look, this inquiry unit that you're doing, because yes, there are so many curriculum connections within this space. Can we have it assessed? Can you grade them? Can you this? And it's like, stop. No, we just let them embrace it. Let it be genuine. I think you build the relationships and not everything has to have a grade at the end of it. It's a celebration more than a grade.
It's so lovely to be able to give students the opportunity to take risks in an environment that is manageable and planned. So I think particularly against the backdrop of a lot of conversations that are happening around the world about healthy relationships, it seems like the year 8 day is really important and doing this in mixed gender groups. Tell us a little bit about that day. What makes it work? What makes it, again, so that it's not just a tokenistic experience?
I guess the first thing important thing to say is that it's part of a program of days. And so we do this at year 6 for us at Grimwade House, and that's obviously a co-ed space, at year 8 with Merton Hall, MGGS, and again in year 10. And so it's very intentional that we can keep on drawing them back together. I guess the first part of it is that this program sits very, very much within our wider health and PE curriculum. And so it's not a flash in the pan. It's something, these are topics that we are talking about in year 7, year 8, year 9, and year 10. And if you're going to be talking about consent, if you're going to be talking about what's appropriate to send online, it's so much a richer conversation to have that with the people who, for the most part, our boys and our girls will be sending it to. And so, again, it is a key part of our programming and builds into our curriculum as well. And it's not just a one-off. You know, we'll pick up on the conversations, we'll continue those in the classroom, the things that they shared, the opinions of the girls, let those conversations continue. I guess it is a spicier space than perhaps making a documentary. And some of the prompts, especially by year 10, get very, very spicy. But they are the things that they're seeing and witnessing. We know average age that boys are seeing pornography is 13. So for us to not have those conversations with them is naive. I think part of this also is accepting the limits of our professionalism. So we have partnered with a healthy relationships organization that have decades of experience in this space and research to support that too. And they support us with the structure of the day, the sort of prompts that are there, and that they're very responsive to feedback and changing it to make sure that it's topical and sort of reflective of what we're seeing at this point in our classrooms. We start off with, again, some pretty low key stakes engagement. So we have an icebreaker and values walk. We get them all standing up in a room, nothing like movement to help us. Agree, neutral, disagree. So you're moving across the room. And we start off with something simple like ice cream is better than chocolate. Where does everyone move to? And then, you know, the questions get more and more challenging. Adults make too much fuss about online safety. Female athletes should be paid the same as male athletes. That is one that gets them every time. And this is a really great way for us to see the dynamics of the groups. As Kerry said, we work so hard in working out who's going to be together, which adults are going to be in that space, and where the dynamic is going. So some of my boys will stand in the middle for everything because they just feel so uncomfortable about what's happening. We have a break, we can get them to the side, have a chat to them, you know, how do you feel? And then you see some who are just being antagonistic. I'm going to disagree with everything. But we start off with low stake questions that then quickly go through to become higher stake. So one of the values walks, if someone's nude gets leaked, it's their own fault for sharing it in the first place. And it's really interesting to see where people stand.
From a girls' school side of things, it's just the different perspectives that the girls get, and I think the boys as well, because I think when you're in a single-sex environment, you're bouncing ideas off each other, but you only know the space that you're in. So you, of course there should be equality when it comes to sport, but hold on, what about all of these other factors that might come into it from a boy's perspective, and allowing both girls and boys to brainstorm, thrash it out together and disagree. You know, it becomes a fun space. If, again, Anna-Louise mentioned the staff that are in that space really make sure that it's a controlled, safe environment, but allowing them to thrash out these ideas, and quite often they'll come together and be in that middle space for those really controversial questions. But I do think that the learning goes both ways. It's really important to bring them all together to then actually be able to step out of that co-ed space and go back to their reciprocal schools and be able to say, that made me feel uncomfortable. Oh, I was unsure about that. So they go back into their own environment where they can then unpack it a little bit more in the classroom as well. So, and I think the other element of the healthy relationships that's sensational and it blows me away every time is having our year 11 and 12 students sit on a panel and answer questions. I'd far rather hear a 17-year-old talk about their experience than us standing up there and saying, you know, be careful about what you're putting online.
And I'd probably just add that, you know, we do take it slowly. There's a lot of breaks. There's food involved. That always helps with the boys and girls. There's a good recess break. There's some muffins. It's a great opportunity for them to go back to their safe space, go back to their friends, and then to come back in to carry on that discussion. So once they're feeling a bit more comfortable, we then will then have those small group discussions. Recently in Melbourne, we've had a number of schools hit the newspapers because of deepfake images of students or Excel spreadsheets rating students. And once they're feeling more comfortable with each other, it is so important to get back into that space and then be able to talk about some of those issues that we see and that we know that are part of their lives. But I think if we didn't have the icebreakers, and I'll be honest, I think if we didn't have them together in year 7 Melbourne experience, it wouldn't be as fruitful and productive as it is. But there is a trust between them and a respect. And they also know that if boys or girls don't meet the values of the school, then we will hold them to that. And I think that's a really important part of building the trust from the students, that they know that that's a safe space and the parents know that that's a safe space as well.
It's great to hear that you're not afraid of what boys or girls might say. And I think that's important. There's real power in giving student voice credibility and not as adults reacting in knee-jerk ways to students saying things that might make our hair stand on end, but they genuinely want to know. And I know there needs to be a controlled space, but it's great to hear that student voice is valued. I'm also reminded of a Brené Brown quote, which I'm going to paraphrase, but she says something to the effect that it's hard to misunderstand or despise people up close. And so the whole idea is that the more you build relationship, the more you start understanding someone else, and then the harder it is to have problematic views about that person, because you're growing in relationship and empathy. And I love how, and Louise, you talk about this process of them building up to it. And clearly, as you see your older boys and girls coming back and engaging in the program, there's obviously real meaning for them too. I have to ask you this. What significant thing did you get wrong early on that if you had to do it all again, you would change?
We spent a lot of time in that first year dealing with mobile phones. We just weren't clear enough from the start about our code of conduct, our expectations. There's now a very explicit code of conduct that goes out to parents too. We live our values. And that's what I love about Melbourne Grammar School. That's what I love about Melbourne Girls Grammar School. We live our values. And parents know that.
I think that's key as well. I think it's Simon Sinek who's like, you need to know the why. I think bringing staff and bringing parents on that journey, letting them know the why we're doing this, honestly, we've got staff chomping at the bit to be part of this program versus the first couple of years where they were like, no, in the city with a bunch of year 7s, what are we thinking? So now they can see the why, they can see how impactful it is. So I think not underestimating how much structure and how much preparation goes into getting all of those little bits right. It doesn't just happen by chance.
And giving it that time, giving staff time to plan together, to work together, to build the curriculum, to make it intentional. Mm. And I think actually it rolling out, especially for the healthy relationships and really important staff professional development, we're asking staff to lead discussions on some pretty spicy topics. And some of them just don't feel comfortable in that space. And it's naive, even if they are a health teacher, to feel that they would, because you're asking them to respond to a whole gamut of young people and not quite knowing exactly what they're going to say. And so we have rolled out a lot of professional development and asked for their feedback about what's working well and what's not working well too.
So often we have high expectations of our teachers, of our educators, but we don't match that expectation with the empowerment. And so I think it's so wonderful to hear how you are supporting teachers to be the best in that role. And clearly, Kerry, I've been in school spaces. If people are chomping at the bit to be part of a program, then you're doing something right.
It has been amazing. Huge shout out to Jess McKenzie, who's running the program at Melbourne Girls. And I know you've had Chris to start it off, and now you've got Liz at Melbourne Grammar. Just amazing what they're doing behind the scenes. You know, we're so lucky. We get to talk passionately about it because we've seen the students come out the other side. But honestly, it's not such a chore for our staff to get involved.
I agree. You know, at the beginning, we would have people complaining about how much they were rostered on to Melbourne Experience. And now staff are just fully on board because they see the value that the boys and girls are getting this on a social, emotional level.
You've actually partly answered my next question, which is about sustainability. You said in the beginning, Anna Louise, the connection that you and Kerry had made a lot of this possible in terms of the initial trust. But let's be honest, good programs like this can't be tied to personalities. Is that kind of sustainability front of mind for you?
It's now really embedded in the culture of both of our schools. In 2026, our two councils and our executives have come together with a memorandum of understanding that this is part of who we are as Melbourne Grammar and Melbourne Girls, because as our principals move on, as we all move on into different roles, it's really important that it stands strong within our school program, middle years and beyond. So that's the exciting part. We've got to a point now where there's a strong understanding. It's a part of who we are as a school, so that the students leave feeling that they are old grammarians of both.
That then trickles down. You know, when Kerry and I would be in our separate calendar meetings, I'm not sure everyone will know what trying to plan a school calendar is like for the year ahead. And we'll both be in our separate meetings saying, right, so we're going to aim for this week. And just, right, we'll both tell them that the other one has said that that's what they're going to do. But making it from the start that this is a key platform that has to go into the calendar from 14 months out, 15 months out, so that can't be overwritten, making sure there's lots of documentation so that when people come and go and leave, that there's a documentation there to help them understand the risk assessments, the learning outcomes.
But it struck me so much about this conversation, both of you, is just your passion for your schools, for education, for the children in your care. What more could a parent or a school or students want than folk like you who are just passionate about what you do? One final question before we wrap up. Kerry, this might very well seem like it's framed towards Anna Louise, but I think your perspective is just as important. Now, for a boys' school, thinking about approaching a nearby girls' school, and there are lots of those across our coalition, for the first time, or maybe in terms of re-establishing the relationship, like happened with you, what is the one thing you would say they most need to get right?
I think it's to be humble. Boys' schools can often come across that they have the answers. And I think there is that perception that that boys will gain more than the girls out of this experience. And then there has to be an openness about the work that will take and to meet them where they're at. And so I think you've got to really come with a humility about how you work together and what you can offer the girls' school, not just what you're going to gain out of it. You know, I think recognizing that there are difficulties in running a program like this, that there is hard work involved, that there are some problems you're going to have to overcome is really important part of sort of branching and reaching out. I think coming with a well-formed idea, because I think in the busyness of the school day, everyone just thinks about the amount of work that it's going to take.
It's the same actually for both, which how good, you know, it actually echoes how I think a girls' school looks at it. I know being a Kiwi, there's a Māori proverb that we often use in New Zealand, which I think it relates beautifully to schools as well. And it's I wish I knew it all in te reo, but it's, you know, what's the most important thing in the world? And it's he tangata, he tangata, he tangata. It's the people, it's the students. So as long as we're benefiting students equally, and it's not just for the boys, it's for the girls as well, then we're doing something right.
This has been an amazing conversation for me, and I know people who listen to it are going to benefit. Both those who already have coordinate programs, I think, are going to learn something, but those who want to start something up as well. So it's been wonderful to have you both on. Thank you so much for your time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Bruce.
Anna Louise and Kerry's insights into bridging the historical divide between Melbourne Grammar School and Melbourne Girls Grammar School challenge us to move beyond isolation and intentionally design spaces for meaningful coordinate collaboration. By reframing cross-school collaboration as an essential vehicle for growth, rather than a distraction from single-gender strengths, they provide a vital blueprint for how educators can cultivate genuine trust and mutual respect between boys and girls. Their emphasis on shared experiences, from the student-led autonomy of the Melbourne Experience documentary project to navigating spicier discussions around deepfakes and consent, offers a practical roadmap for fostering real-world empathy, accountability, and healthy relationships. Our sincere thanks to Anna Louise and Kerry for sharing their expertise and demonstrating how reciprocal trust between educators can empower the next generation. Until next time, keep on championing boys' education.